Well, I'm holding in my hand right now a list of predictions that Sean David Morton gave us when he was on the program in November of 2005, when he was our special guest on January 1st of this year, and then also when he came in and made a cameo appearance on 6606. We'll talk with him about these predictions. We'll talk with him about future predictions. We'll talk with Sean David Morton in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome to Coast. Let me tell you a little bit about our guest, Sean David Morton. Those of you who are brand new, those of you who have listened to Coast for a long, long time, you know Sean David Morton. Sean David Morton is a natural psychic, a trained remote viewer, remote viewing instructor, an intuitive consultant, an investigative reporter, accomplished award-winning producer, director, screenwriter as well for television and film. Sean uses his talents and abilities to predict future occurrences and trends, such as earth changes, political events, stock market fluctuations as well. Tell you a little bit more about Sean again. He's been on Coast to Coast in the program for 15 years, starting in March of 1991. Tonight will be his 55th appearance on Coast to Coast. That's a milestone. Maybe the number one guest in terms of appearances on the program, unless I counted up Richard C. Hoagland's numbers, which sometimes I think Richard's on 55 times in a month, so I'm not sure. But those will probably be very close to each other. Sean was instrumental in bringing Area 51 to international attention, did the first national television stories on the Chupacabra, the Phoenix Lights, the Miami UFO contacts, so many more. He studied with the Dalai Lama in India. He was one of the first civilians trained in remote viewing. And he has worked with Project Foresight inside the Pentagon using his talents in the service of his country. He heads up the Delphi Associates newsletter. We'll tell you a little bit about that as well. He's got a first major book coming out as well, an international espionage thriller called Black Seraph, if I'm pronouncing that right, Sean. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Very Thank good. You. Hey, before we get into anything else, the most important thing is, how is your wife, Melissa, doing now?
We went down to Mexico and had some more MRIs done on her. We're just going to doctor after doctor after doctor, and they just seem to be giving us different diagnoses.
Why Mexico, Sean?
My family, my stepdad, Frank Solomon, and my mother, Maureen Solomon, actually began cancer clinics down in Mexico in the 1970s, and we're responsible for the financing of clinics like the Good Samaritan Clinic, the Clinic de Seidel, American Biologics, and currently a clinic down there called International Biocare. And they, first off, it's a lot more inexpensive. Second off, we have a lot of contacts with doctors and some professionals down there. And they are much more open to holistic therapies and things that, in my opinion, actually work, because I'm a little fed up with the medical system of the United States. It doesn't seem like they're interested in curing disease here. And down there, I just think we get a better deal, and we get people who are legitimately interested in curing patients rather than treating customers, and that's just my opinion.
Well, with your blessing, we can have a lot of Coast to Coast listeners to say a prayer or two.
Well,
for
that would be great. She's not, like I said, she has she's got a couple of misplaced discs in her neck along her spine that are causing some concern, and then she's got a some kind of cyst at the top of the cerebellum that needs to be kind of taken care of. So it's not life threatening. It's one of those things that's just life altering, and we're just trying to figure out ways to deal with it and hopefully find some kind of treatment, or find somebody that has some kind of treatment for this thing, because cysts are so, they're just so hard because they're inside the skull. So there just don't seem to be a lot of holistic treatments. And if you or anybody else out there knows any way to possibly treat this kind of condition, I would certainly be very, very grateful and very open to anybody's suggestion.
Well, I tell you what, Sean, if anybody emails me or sends me a message, we'll make sure we get it right to you, and then you can just go through your own screening process.
Okay.
On
well,
this.
Thank you very much. Well, she's like I said, she's getting the MRIs, and she's going to these neurologists and some guys over at USC neurologists and neurosurgeons, and So I think she's got the best people looking at her. We just need them to, you know, agree on something so that we can just get this taken care of.
Sure.
It's getting very frustrating.
Well, yeah, you know where I come from. Nothing's more important than taking care of the people you care about and love. Nothing matters. Position, career, job, nothing matters unless you take care of those people.
Yeah, and, thank you. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Let's talk about some of the past, some of the future, but the situation in the Middle East is so heated up right now, Sean. I wanted to talk with you about it, especially with what you told us when you were on the program on January 1st, mm-hmm. where you talked a little bit about Bible code experts. And, you know, August 3rd, which in some time zones it already is now, is
August 3rd over there now, actually.
Yeah, it's a very ominous date. And I wanted you just to give me your overview of the entire situation based on you as a psychic and intuitive psychic. And then let's talk about this Bible code story.
Okay, well, the reason I got into the Bible code stuff or got interested in it is when Michael Drosnin first came out with his first book, The Bible Code, in 1996 or so. In 1994, I did a series of meditations. I guess you could call them, instead of past life regressions, they were actually post-life progressions. So part of the training that I had when I was in Nepal was we worked a lot with past lives and previous existences and had a lot of experiences with that kind of karma and how you bring that forward. At the same time, the theory is that with the time stream, if you can go back into your previous existences, that there are certain meditations that you can do to go into, I guess, what you would call post-life progressions. In other words, not just who you were, but who you might actually become in the future. So at this point, I did, there's a particularly complex exercise called a soul transference. And what I did is I was in Anaheim at the Learning Light Foundation there in August of 1994, mm-hmm. and I did this meditation in front of a group of people, and actually, I can't, it's not a channeling, it's actually I went there, and the essence of who I am in the future came here, so it was literally like a time transference. I didn't remember a single thing that I said, but it was then taped, and we had transcriptions of this that were then printed out, and we printed them twice as articles in the newsletter, and then we printed them up on the web for people to take a look at, and we eventually became the Vajra Chronicles, and it explained who I am like 100 years from now, my next incarnation, and looked back on our history, which meant that our future became his past, if you will. So in the course of that, there were a number of very, very interesting dates and very interesting things that were said as part of this Vajra Chronicles body of work, if you will, that predicted, for example, a rising Islamic Jihad, attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. Between 2001 and 2006, that 2006 would be the crux year, if you will, for a massive war that would begin in the Middle East that would have to do with the destruction of the Dome of the Rock, which I'd like to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's a major story today, how ironic it is, but sure, we'll talk about that.
And that, and so what I began to find is that the first time I read Drosnin's book, and then 3 years ago in 2003, we were actually working on a Bible code documentary. We did an Egyptian documentary about the prophecies of the pyramids, and then we had some problems with the funding, but I had all this research, and I wrote a script called Timelines of the Bible Code to shoot as a special. So I had a chance to, our team had a chance to speak with Michael Drosnin and Rabbi Eliyahu Rips and Harold Gans and some people at a company called Duku Media, which actually publishes the Bible Code software, and literally like a PC software of the Bible Code that you can order that is actually designed by the rabbis at Hebrew University. And so all these fascinating things started coming out in the code that were verifying my own visions of what was going to happen in the future, along with time codes and time frames at the same time that were also verifying the things that I was seeing. And a lot of this had to do with what was going on with 2006 and major events in California in 2010 and sort of beyond that. So the interesting thing about the code here is, and just to give you a couple of codes, the ninth of Av, which is actually already today over there, is significant for a number of reasons. And Let me just give you a couple of the codes here, which I think are interesting.
Okay.
And if you'd like, I can give you some history.
And your interpretation or others?
These are codes that I ran just using using the Dooku Media Bible Code software.
Okay.
Which is, so, for example, using the Bible Code, and if you go through the year, if you actually just put in August 3rd of 2006, you come up with August 3rd, 2006, whole earth, whole land, annihilation, Arabia, army, war, and plague on that date. It also comes up with the word Shoah, which means a disaster, ruin, or catastrophe, or a burning sacrifice as well, which was originally the Hebrew name that was given to the extermination of the Jews by the Nazis in the Second World War. You also come up with, and this is primarily out of, you also come up with August 3rd, Iran, Israel, Jewry, Israel, combat, conflict, war, battle, controversy, action, war again, also rocket, projectile, missile, and then it's a kind of an interesting thing. It's like the sentence is, and the popular, likable Ehud, which is kind of a weird thing.
That is weird.
Ehud Barak being, apparently a well-liked leader by people who were over there. And, of course, that, in essence, in many cases, it actually happened today. I mean, Anderson Cooper was on CNN today with his 360 show talking about how, it's already the 3rd of August over there. And this has been the heaviest bombardment so far, missiles, projectiles, if you will, of Israel, actually
yes.
coming from the
Hezbollah.
From the Hezbollah positions. Another one that was run that I thought was interesting was actually for August 1st. And I believe August 1st was the date when the 56 people were killed in Lebanon, the school children, and wasn't that 2 days ago?
That was over the weekend.
Okay, it was before August 1st.
Yeah,
but,
Sunday,
here,
Monday.
For example,
that's right.
I just ran August 1st, and because what came out was August 1st, 2006, which is actually the 7th of Av, 5766, actually says let me get it here. It's it's called the Day of Yahweh's Vengeance. Which is kind of interesting. That the 1st of August would be the day of Yahweh's vengeance, and then just two more here. Jerusalem in the year 5766. Jerusalem again. War shoot, the year 5766 or 2006. And there is the 9th of Av. You get war shoot again, and 9th of Av. War and hot in Jerusalem. Except the Lord of Hosts had left unto us a very small remnant. We should have been as Sodom, we should have been like unto Gomorrah, and for the inhabitants of Jerusalem, domestic war and a buzzard for you, which I think is interesting because that's mostly out of the books of Isaiah and out of Kings. The 3rd of August is just kind of an interesting date because the tribe of Judah in the Old Testament is directly aligned with the zodiological sign of Leo. And so we're always hearing about the Lion of Judah, for example. And so it was actually it has a lot to do with the history of Solomon's Temple, which was destroyed on August 3rd in 586 B.C. by Nebuchadnezzar II of Babylon.
Right.
And of interest, I mean, Saddam Hussein thought that he was, in fact, the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar and made an attempt to actually rebuild the ancient city of Babylon while he was president of Iraq. And and then it was kind of interesting because, again on the 3rd of August in 515 B.C., this was the date when the construction of the second temple began after the Persians permitted all the Jews to return from Babylonian exile. Now, in 19 B.C., you then have Herod the Great who comes along, and he starts this massive expansion of the second temple. And the temple eventually becomes known as Herod's Temple, which was then destroyed by the Romans in 70 A.D. during the Great Roman-Jewish War. Again, the August 3rd date comes into effect again because in 66 was when the Romans actually busted into the temple and used the temple as their headquarters to subjugate the Jewish revolt in Jerusalem, and they slaughtered a pig in the Holy of Holies and just did a whole bunch of things to just completely make all the other people in Jerusalem insane. And in 70 AD, that's when they actually just burned the whole thing to the ground. And the Western Wall was, of course, the most significant part of the structure that survived the attack, which, of course, still stands today, as people know, as the Wailing Wall. So the Jews actually went to war with the Romans three times over the course of this one century. They went to war in 6 AD, which was basically a tax revolt. And the second war was from 66 to 73, which ended with Masada. And then the Romans conceded that this was their hardest fought war at that time. And the war is considered by some to be the first war. And then a second war, which was a minor revolt, which was known as the Kitos War, occurred between 115 and 117. And the third and final war with the Romans was called the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. And Bar Kokhba was actually, and this one was actually from 132 to 135 AD. This was the best organized effort, and it failed because some of Bar Kokhba's allies just failed to come through and betrayed them to the Romans. And this was the man that was actually recognized by the Jewish Sanhedrin as being the Messiah, as being the person that would actually deliver them from the Romans. So it's just interesting, this whole history revolving around the temple, that despite their numerical inferiority, the Jews were convinced that God would eventually intervene on their behalf due to their faithful adherence to the Torah. But after losing so many times in one century, they just gave up on divine intervention. And this was very much the beginning of the Jews' drive towards rising to the top of whatever society they were in through the fields of commerce, government administration, banking. And ironically, very few Jews know their history well enough to know that this is the reason why many Jews today are pursuing intellectual instead of physical careers. So it's a very, very intense thing in Jewish history that has directly to do not only with August 3rd being the destruction of the temple so many times, but it's also when the sun is at the heart of the constellation of Leo, which means dead center of the heart of the Lion of Judah, aligned with Regulus, which is considered the royal star in the heart of Leo. So the August 3rd date kind of, and this is the big debate, this is the big controversy amongst all these Bible code experts, because there seems to be all these terrible things directly related to a war that seem to focus around the August 3rd date.
Well, we're in a war. It is August 3rd.
Right.
How do we pick up the possibility, as you said, on January 1st of this year, as a possible date for a sneak atomic attack?
Well, this is the big debate again, is that the debate here is that there's three words that are all intertwined in the code, and it's the only place where you find them in the entire code, and that is the words Jerusalem, atomic, and world war. And every time you find Jerusalem, the actual M in Jerusalem actually forms the M in the word atomic. And so something that has to do with World War III, specifically the code for World War III, Jerusalem, and atomic, runs through the code itself. And the warning has always been given of the 2 years being the year 2000 and the year 2006. And it's so important that you know what a mezuzah is, right?
I do not.
A mezuzah is 170 words that are actually taken out of the Torah that are then rolled up into a scroll, and then it's placed on the lintel of a Jewish home. So
okay.
When you enter the house, it's the thing that you touch with your hand and you kiss your hand. You kiss it when you come into the house.
All right.
You know what I'm talking about.
I'm not Jewish, so
yeah,
I don't
Jewish,
know.
Yeah, Jewish mezuzah. The mezuzah has this 170 words in it that were ordered by God to be set apart from the rest of the Torah, the rest of the some 300,000 words in the Torah. And in this, again, is a warning about the years 2000 and 2006 specifically, and the words atomic and the words Jerusalem at that time, with the mathematical possibilities of an atomic strike on the city of Jerusalem, destroying the temple and the Dome of the Rock within that year. Now, the debate becomes, some Bible code researchers kept saying, you know, August 3rd. I suppose we'll know by the end of the day. And yet,
so what if the day comes and goes, Sean, and nothing really happens?
Well, but it's not that nothing really has happened. You've had the worst rocket attacks in the history.
Well, okay, but nothing atomic. Let's
the modern
say.
History of Israel. You've had you have the war that of the Bible codes that I just read to you. Once again, as I was saying, the debate is, some of these people were saying, well, August 3rd is going to be this date. There's the rest of the code seems to just point towards the year 2006. Here's the challenge.
Hold it right there. We'll get to that challenge. We'll also go through some of his past predictions. And then we're going to talk about the future, the economy. Sean will probably have some stock picks for us. He had one that had a whopping 340% profit with some of his picks on the show when he was on a couple of years ago, 347%. And then we'll talk about weather changes as well. Later on, your phone calls with Sean David Morton right here on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, Sean David Morton, Sean's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. DelphiAssociates.org. That's his website. We'll be back with Sean. We'll pick up from where we left off, and we'll also talk about the economy, maybe get a few stock picks from Sean, earth changes. We had a couple earthquakes out in my neck of the woods here in Los Angeles, and they've also had some rumblings near Cleveland. Can you believe that? Back in a moment. Sean, I'm getting lots of emails for your wife, Melissa, from people with some suggested doctors, and I'm just going to forward them to Stephanie at our office, and then she'll just send them on to you
tomorrow.
That's
great. Thank you so much. Thank you. And just thank everybody out there for caring, and thank you, too.
Absolutely. Okay, we left off August 3rd, the big date.
Again, it's a linchpin point tomorrow. We've seen the worst bombing of Israel there, and... And here's the real challenge. My thought about what's going on with August 3rd specifically has more to do with 2006. I think I've said a number of times on the show as well that man trying to put dates on God's time, I think, is just vanity. And
we're guilty of that. We're guilty of taking people that have your gifts, for example, and other psychics, and trying to force you guys to give us specific dates,
and that's
difficult.
Well, the challenge is again that when you're looking at it, I guess the difference is perspective. One perspective is like driving a car on a road, where there's a certain amount of time to take you from point A to point B, and another perspective would be say flying a plane over that same type of territory. You can see two peaks, for example, of two major events. But it becomes very difficult to understand the distance of the valley between those two peaks. Is that clear?
Yeah. I guess on the other hand, though, one could say, hey, we're going to get hit by an asteroid.
Right.
Without a date. And one day, eventually,
it's
going to happen.
Well, you see, here's the remarkable thing about the Bible code, and I'll just say this one last thing about it, and we can move on to something
else.
But it's when you talk about opening a sealed book, and in the age of computers, so much of the Bible itself talks about, God tells the prophets to seal this up until the end of days, to keep this a secret until the end of days. And I really do believe that we're living in that end of days period. And when you search the words World War III and you discover that the year it might begin was foretold in this 22-line scroll that's central to the Bible, the mezuzah, again, it contains 170 words from out of the 304,805 words of the original five books of the Bible. God specifically commands his people to keep it in a separate scroll and post it on the entrance of every home. And the 2 years that are mentioned in those 170 words are the years 2000, it's the Hebrew year 5760 and 5766. The years 2000 to 2006 are encoded in those 70 words. Now, World War, and the only time it's encoded in the entire Bible, appears in the same place and crosses over one of these sacred verses, and the words atomic holocaust, the only time it's encoded in the Bible, also appears in the same 2 years in the two verses of the scroll. So the mezuzah contains these 15 verses, and the years 2000 and 2006 are encoded in the hidden text. And it also says in these codes with 2006, it will bombard your country. Terror and devastation is being launched, which we're seeing right now in 2006. And it just can't be by chance that the most clearly encoded world war were both hidden in these 170 words of this scroll 3,000 years after they were written, and still today is fastened on the doorway of nearly every home in Israel and every Jew throughout the world, that you have this ancient code which has now predicted World War III, which could start, quite possibly is starting right now before our very eyes. And it's also interesting, too, because when you run World War II, it literally says World War II would start in 5700 Hebrew year, which was the year 1939 and 1940. So Armageddon in the year 2006 was the warning encoded into these particular sacred verses. It also says, too, that it has the word terrorism encoded with World War, and right below it says war to the knife, which suggests that it's a war of total annihilation, which is included once again with the war atomic holocaust,
right.
That satellites might be out, that that tanks won't run because there's no oil, that everybody runs out of bullets, and this literally goes to a point. And that was one of the most shocking things about some of the CNN news coverage, that fighting had gone to hand to hand in some of these areas along the you know, in the war, that they were literally using like knives and bayonets at the you know, at the bottom
of
it.
And see, I'm afraid, Sean, this could get out of hand.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me put a theory out there.
All right.
2006 in the Hebrew year, again, remember, ends in late September, the last 3 days. Let's call it, just for the sake of it, let's call it October 1st.
Okay.
So 2006 ends, according to the Bible, according to the Hebrew year, in 2006. Let's say that you have a person like Eliyahu Rips, a respected professor at Hebrew University. Let's say a world-renowned journalist like Michael Drosnin, or Harold Gantz, who is a cryptologist at the Pentagon, who quit his job at the Pentagon to move to Israel to work on the code. Let's say that these people contacted the Mossad and contacted Ehud Olmert, and let's say they knew about this particular code, about the bombing of Jerusalem, about this annihilation. Do you think that it's possible that this war is now happening because of these codes and these predictions?
Maybe. We know that Drosnin tried to notify the Israeli government and Yitzhak Rabin that he was going to be assassinated.
Absolutely. Well, look at it this way. If you were sitting back, let's say you were the prime minister of Israel, and somebody said, well, and pointed out that in the mezuzah, that 2006, that these things were going to happen, and you knew that that Hezbollah had access to, say, Iranian rockets, or even maybe Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction, mm-hmm. which we talked about on this show 3 years ago, and I said, watch the Bekaa Valley, because there's a bunch of stuff hidden in the
right.
caves in the Bekaa Valley. And I think I said it on a Thursday, and then you actually had a quote from a general, I think, the following Tuesday.
Yes.
It was a U.S. general and I think an Iraqi general that said, yes, these WMDs have been hidden in the Bekaa Valley. I mean, let's say you're Ehud Olmert and you're looking at this prophecy that 2006 is going to be this Holocaust, and you know that these missiles have this kind of range and can strike your capital, Jerusalem. Do you use an event like the Israeli soldiers being kidnapped to overreact, if you will, and start this war to push your borders further back, that maybe this entire conflict is being driven by these prophecies that they know very well that we're talking about tonight?
If I believed in prophecy, and I believe they do, I think I would do. I would go for it, and I would use the prophecy, and I would try to do whatever I could to avoid it.
Well, that seems to be because when I first saw this happening, and I saw that, I kept thinking, why is Israel reacting like this to these two soldiers? These guys were kidnapped, and there were negotiations with Hezbollah, and Hezbollah was saying, well, we want some people released, and you know, I mean, I remember the raid on Entebbe where, you know, the Israelis are famous for going in with strike forces and rescuing their people and doing all that. Now we've got, you know, Lebanon being completely destroyed. And, you know, and I actually, when I was 16 years old, when my family was living in Cairo, my stepdad had a Lebanese business partner, a man named Mimo Marcus. And we were actually in Beirut, and I was like driving.
A man named Neiman Marcus?
No, his name is Mimo Marcus. His name was Mimo
okay.
Marcus. Not Neiman Marcus.
Well, that's what I thought you said.
That's funny, though. So we were in Beirut, actually, when the war between the Muslims and the Christians started, and we're helping, actually, with the relief efforts of getting people out of Lebanon and actually getting them into Cairo, where they were sleeping in tents on lawns in front of the Sheraton Hotel. And have you ever been there to Lebanon?
I have not.
Because it's an amazingly beautiful place.
I've got
place.
Family that have been there. I've got some family that are still out in that region.
Yeah.
But I've never been there.
Well, it looks like Lake Tahoe, kind of, except for with the cedars up in the mountains. And,
Beirut used to be the jewel of the Middle East.
Well, yes, it's not anymore.
But anyways, go through this, and then I want to go through your past predictions
for the rest of this hour. The theory about this, again, is that once again, the way you can tell if Bible codes are good is because they've predicted certain things in the past, and now they're predicting things in the future. World War II gave the date of beginning in 1939 and 1940. It talks about World War III, once again, the opening phases in 2006. Now, is it all the way through 2006, the solar year until the 1st of January, or is it up until the end of the Hebrew year of 2006, which is approximately about the last 3 days of September with Rosh Hashanah? And I think that what's happened here is that Israel, having been forewarned and forearmed, knowing that something like this was coming, has taken the aggressive action to be able to expand its borders to protect itself from longer-range missiles that are being supplied by the Iranians. And, of course, the suspicion is that the Iranians now have these Sunburn missiles that are virtually unstoppable they got from the Red Chinese, and that they actually have some kind of nuclear warhead to use on the top of this, which they got from the Ukrainians, which the Ukrainians then got from the Russians. And that's the two big fears are that they have these nuclear weapons from the Ukrainians on these Sunburn missiles by the Chinese, and that Hezbollah and Hamas will eventually be able to access these WMDs that are hidden in a series of caves in the Bekaa Valley and actually create this atomic Holocaust scenario, the destruction of Jerusalem, which, again, there's another Bible code in there as well that talks about the recreation of the third temple. And that is a gigantic linchpin prophetically for that entire area, that once you actually have the third temple rebuilt, which means the Dome of the Rock has to be destroyed somehow, and the third temple of Solomon gets rebuilt, and there are Bible codes that talk about the third temple actually being rebuilt by 2008, and you have red heifers for sacrifice being bred here in the United States. You have the men who are the builders of the temple who take a rock up to the Temple Mount every year to lay the cornerstone and are turned away. If that were to happen, and it would have to happen through some kind of Arab attack, because if the Israelis were to knock it down, you'd be looking at a billion Muslims declaring holy war
sure,
on it.
Sure.
Or it would have to be some kind of earthquake, some kind of natural catastrophe, in order to give the Israelis some kind of excuse to knock down the Dome of the Rock and actually rebuild the third temple of Solomon on that rock, which is...
That's end times, man.
That's end times, which is believed. The reason that rock's so significant is it was believed that was where Jacob's pillow was, where he got his vision and wrestled with the angel, that was where Abraham took his son Isaac to be sacrificed. Unfortunately, the Muslims think that Muhammad ascended to heaven at that point,
maybe they're all right,
John. The Ark of the Covenant.
Maybe they're all right. Anyways, past predictions. Let's go through some things, okay? And then we'll talk about the economy and earth changes next hour.
Okay.
November, year ago, you said that the flu pandemic will reach its peak in 2006, Asia particularly. I still don't think that's going to happen. You?
And it looks like it has not happened yet. There have been a series of scares about it. The only thing that I can point to is the Chinese have actually acted very quickly and very swiftly. There have been rumors from inside of China that they've jumped on entire towns of several hundred people and actually just wiped out whole towns when it looked as though that pandemic and epidemic was going to happen. You know, we're not through 2006 yet, and remember that if these people have access to some biological weapons in the Bekaa Valley, then there may be a possibility of an outbreak later on this year. It's really the one weird prediction that I always thought that we'd see this happening between 2004 and 2006 that seems to start popping up and seems to raise its head, and then
it goes away.
Yeah, I mean, thank the Lord it does. And at the same time, this seems to fade, or something seems to happen where they find the cause of it. But, you know, so far that global pandemic, which all the experts have been saying for this time period is it's not a question of if, it's just a question of when, has not yet materialized. Again, thank goodness.
Dick Cheney, you say, will resign due to health issues, but you didn't say when.
This has a lot to do with the totally confused political scenario that I see happening for 2008. Outside of looking at Hillary as a Democratic candidate, you know, I still think that Cheney's going to resign. There were people calling for his resignation after he shot that guy in the face. There are still major investigations underway by Fitzgerald that Dick Cheney is dead in the center of. I still don't see him as vice president by 2007, but I also see I'm not really sure who Bush would pick to replace him, quite possibly his brother Jeb.
Well, you do talk about Jeb being the 2008 the Republican presidential candidate.
That there is that possibility, and yet, again, the only reason I'm not committing to anything in 2008 is because all I can tell you is that after 2007, just complete chaos happens with presidential politics. I'm not so sure that that the president is actually in office. I'm not so sure who the president is at that time because of the replacement of Cheney. I'm looking at what I think is going to be a three-party race with quite possibly maybe John McCain and Joseph Lieberman running together as a kind of a third dark horse party, which may in turn hand it to the only way the Democrats could possibly win with Hillary Clinton in 2008, because Hillary simply can't. She there's not a single red state that I think that she could carry.
There's got to be a conservative third party involved.
Right. There would have to be somebody to actually suck away votes from the Republicans, and there are so many people defecting from the Republican Party now, simply because the real hardcore dyed-in-the-wool Reagan Republicans are kind of deserting the party en masse, simply because they see Bush as soft on immigration. They see this war just, continuing and getting worse and worse and worse. His handling of fiscal policy has just been awful. And remember, the Republicans were priding themselves on being fiscal conservatives, and that's not happening with this government at all.
No, that's a good point. Gold, you said, would go through the roof. You were right about that.
Okay, well, my call on it was 725. Now, remember, people say, when I call the tops of gold, these metals go to a plateau and then they fall down the other side.
And it did go well over 700.
It went to 729.
Yep.
It actually went to 729 before it formed a perfect parabola.
And now it's about 650-ish.
That's right. But it went as low as 540. It went up to 725, and I told all my people to put their sell orders in at 725. Had one gentleman who's a friend of mine actually buy, after hearing me on the show, on the July show a year ago. When gold was, what was it a year?
I think it was four something.
Yeah, I thought it was between like 360 and about 400 or so. I forget, but he bought $400,000 worth of gold, and I told him to put a sell order in at 725, and he sold it at 725, and it hit 729 somewhere around the 10th of May, then dropped down the other side to approximately 540 or so. And you'll see it back up in the 800 range, but I don't think that's going to be until let's call it 800 by Christmas or January. There's got to be a lot of other things that have to happen first before gold starts moving above that. There's a great company called Swiss American, which I think supports your show as well, that has some great gold portfolio stuff that that I like and I support. And but my numbers for gold was that we would see gold go to 615 and then kind of drop, go to 725 and then drop down that. And my next level on gold, let's call it 825. I remember I said on the show that worst case scenario, if all hell broke loose, that we would actually see gold at approximately 850 by, say, Labor Day. But then my more conservative estimate, I think, was like 725, and that's what it is.
You know, and I've got some notes here for our Lear client, where some people have said it could go up to $1,000 or $2,000 an ounce. That's incredible.
That's a hard call, and it's a hard call because there's so much gold out there, George. Mm-hmm. Women like it, obviously. So there's jewelry and there's chains and
the Chinese are buying it now, right?
I think about 5 years ago, the Chinese government said it was okay for the Chinese to buy gold. So to them, that's what money really is. So that's part of what's actually driving gold up. But at the same time, India has like billions of dollars worth of gold in the form of jewelry and chains, what have you. So when you get gold up to that 800 to 850 level, you suddenly have a whole bunch of gold that starts coming on the market because people start selling jewelry and gold chains and whatever else. So adjusted for inflation, even though gold should be somewhere around, say, 1,600 or so, there are simply market forces in place that I think we'll probably see gold over 1,000 maybe in about, say, 4 years, maybe.
All right. Hey, do you got a good deal for newsletters for listeners?
Absolutely. The Delphi Associates newsletter, if you guys want to call the number, which is 888-452-7999. We have the senior version of the newsletter. We actually have a PDF online version of the newsletter as well. It's 16 pages, full color. It tells you our motto is it tells you all about tomorrow because we tell you all about today.
Stay with us today. Sean David Morton, we're going to talk about some stock picks, the economy for the first half of the next hour. Then we'll talk about some earth changes. earthquakes, and then later on, Fast Night. We'll open up the phone banks. It'll be your turn.